It's a World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. It's episode 104, Kartik Krishnaya, my co-host, myself, Christopher Harris, the gaffer, and it's post-Boxing Day, and it's pre-New Year's Day, so lots to look forward to and lots to talk about. Kartik, any presents you received, any Christmas presents or soccer presents in the last few weeks?
That I can think of? Trying to remember. No, I don't think there was anything actually soccer football related under my tree. But actually chocolates in the shape of a soccer ball, and it's the old kind of buckyball chocolates. That's the one stocking stuffer I got that was soccer related.
Yeah, and probably, I mean, an early present for you, but it was FM19 Football Manager. How does that one compare to previous versions?
It's more layered. It's more complicated. I'm hooked. I've been playing it pretty frequently. I'm into my, I think I'm into the 2024-25 season. So that tells you I'm in 23-24. I'm somewhere there. So I've been playing it, I don't want to say nonstop since it came out early November. It's been a month and a half or almost 2 months, but been playing it a lot. That was an early Christmas present because I'm used to getting Football Manager around Christmas time because it used to come out in December. They've gradually moved the date up, which at some point they have to stop moving the date up because then the squad lists are not as thorough or complete if they were to move it up. For example, when FIFA is launched, sometimes they miss transfers. But Football Manager's database is very comprehensive. Fantastic game. If you have not gotten it, I would strongly suggest it if you're that kind of player. It's and if you're a person who plays FIFA, but you play FIFA Manager mode, because I know there are people who do that, you should probably try this game. It would it'll test your football skill and football knowledge more than FIFA does.
Yeah, for me, Kartik, the only soccer-related present I got was a Bluetooth headset. So I tested it out on Boxing Day. Actually, it's pretty good because I was able to, on my computer, pair it up with the headphone and then put on Fubo. And it was Liverpool against Newcastle, and it was already, I think, 2-0 up. So I was able to put the headset on and do some housework and kind of do some cleaning up around the house and then listen to the commentary. So for me, being a big fan of football commentaries, actually probably will, the next 12 months at least, I'll get a lot of use out of it in terms of listening to some of those commentaries as well as radio commentaries and listening more and more closely to the words, as well as, of course, watching the pictures now and again.
I did not get that for Christmas. I bought a pair for myself on a Black Friday sale after Thanksgiving, which is why I did not get it for Christmas. But same deal. And I'm using that actually not because I'm still television, not cord cutter, but I have been able to use that to actually catch up on football podcasts. So I've been listening to the Guardian podcast, which I normally listen to, our podcast, other podcasts related to football, including AC Jimbo's podcast. I've started listening to that. I still prefer the Rushton pod, the Guardian pod. I know there are a lot of people who have split loyalties there and feel like you have to pick a side. I guess I picked a side in sticking with Max Rushton and the Guardian Football Weekly pod. But now that I have these Bluetooth headsets and I can move around more freely, I've at least during this holiday period, for festive period, started listening to the Richardson podcast also. It's good, but I like Rushton's pod better.
All right, Kartik, so we've got a lot to cover. What for you has been your standout match from this past week? And I realize that there was a lot to watch and a lot to consider, but what was your best pick?
Okay, so there were four standout matches for me. The top one was Red Bull Leipzig, RB Leipzig. I know they are Red Bull Leipzig, but they don't go by that name for legal reasons in Germany. RB Leipzig versus Bremen. It might have been the best match I've seen all season. It was back and forth. There was a lot of just good technical midfield play, which I like to see in a lot of these 3-2, 4-3 matches in England and in Germany. They end up becoming 4-3 or 3-2 because of defensive errors and bad giveaways in midfield. That wasn't the case in this match. Also got to see Josh Sargent come on and score a few minutes after he came on, unlike his previous goal, which was a sitter, and against a team that's likely going to get relegated in Fortuna Dusseldorf. This was a goal against a team that might qualify, could very well qualify for Champions League, away from home, And he had to help create the goal. You know, well, nice 1-2 pass, some good hold-up play, and then not a difficult finish, but not an easy finish either. So that's a big thing. And I have to say, Chris, I'm the way some other U.S. men's national team fans were hooked on watching Dortmund to watch Pulisic. I mean, I watched Dortmund anyway, and it didn't matter to me that Pulisic was playing for them or not, because they've always just been, going back to Klopp, a very open, exciting team to watch. I'm watching Werder Bremen now when they're on. I'll admit that Manchester City was playing at the same time against Crystal Palace, and I switched the channel, and I never switched back until this match was over, and that match was pretty much over because that was 3-1 at that point for Palace. Real quickly, Villa Leeds. I know you're going to talk about that match. Norwich Forest, which was fantastic. I ended up watching that over Premier League matches yesterday. That was such a good match, and such an atmosphere at Carrow Road, the kind of atmosphere we're not getting at a lot of Premier League grounds. So if Norwich gets promoted, it'd be great if they bring that atmosphere with them. And Atlanta-Juve, which was a match in Serie A also on Boxing Day, four fantastic matches. The match we missed, Chris, because it wasn't on ESPN Plus, was Leeds-Blackburn. I'm told this was a fantastic match as well, but it wasn't available on ESPN Plus. And it was also running concurrent with Norwich Forest, and I probably would have watched Norwich Forest, because basically what happened is I watched Atlanta-Juve, that ended, and I switched to the Norwich Forest match towards the end of the first half of that match. So there were overlaps of these matches. And ESPN Plus is great in that it gives you so much in terms of material. But where ESPN Plus is not great, Chris, is that sometimes it's tough to find things when they have so much material.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. Sometimes I know that they have one of the games on, and I'm looking, I can't find it. And then I'll log out, or I'll come back in. It is sometimes hard to find things because they have so much stuff, but it is there, though. What I would say, Kartik, I mean, my game of the week had to be Aston Villa against Leeds United. This was in the Championship. Aston Villa going up 2-0 early, and Leeds just coming back. And the thing about Leeds this season is just the youth players, the younger players. It's not as if, like, even the owners of Leeds United went out and spent millions and millions on all these top players. A lot of them are local lads, or even lads from England, coming through the system. and Leeds bounced back, tied it 2-2. And with like 1 minute to go in injury time, I think it was like 94th minute or 95th minute, scored the winner to win it 3-2 at Villa Park. Just a great game. And what I would say too, and actually I posted this on Twitter, is if you're not watching the Championship this season, you're missing probably one of the most competitive and exciting soccer leagues in the world. Some games are dead rubbers, but most of the games are really entertaining. The level of football is really good, and it's very, very competitive. So Villa Leeds, I mean, it's one of those things that Villa could lose that game and then bounce back in the next game and beat Swansea City, as they did on Boxing Day, and vice versa. I mean, it's like all the teams are kind of beating each other, but Leeds are definitely ahead of the pack and playing some great football, as well as Norwich City.
Yeah, the thing that I think needs to be pointed out from this is that we have seen now under Bielsa, in this stretch of matches for Leeds, it happened again against Blackburn, that the thought was he trains them so hard they're going to break down. And they had a lot of injuries. They train three times a day, by the way. They had a lot of injuries early in the season, including Kemar Roof, who's been the hero in both of these matches over the festive period. But now you're seeing minutes 80 to 90, that superior conditioning kick in. And we're seeing that with Farke, who is kind of a Jurgen Klopp-type manager, German manager as well, but plays a similar style, similar type training sessions for Norwich City. Look, I'm not. I know a lot of people think I just bash the Premier League. Maybe I do. I'm telling you, if you're a fan of English football and you're watching the Premier League and not watching the Championship this season, you are missing out. I cannot stress this enough. I think the gap in terms of entertainment and competitiveness between the top two divisions in England is larger than I remember it. Now, the Championship has always been more competitive and in many ways more compelling. But this season, I mean, I go down the table and I look at where Stoke and Swansea are, and they're two sides. Sorry, Chris, to mention Swansea lost to Villa yesterday. But I look at those two sides and I think, you know, both of those two sides could still make a run and finish in the top six. There is a real great story brewing at QPR that very few people are talking about, with Steve McLaren and how well he's done recovering that side after a horrible start. They could push into the playoffs. And then we've obviously got the Leeds and Norwich stories to talk about. And we have to talk about Borough and Villa potentially underachieving, even though I think Dean Smith has done a good job at Villa. They were so far adrift under Steve Bruce that it seems like maybe they're not going to be able to recover that, and they're going to be stuck in the championship for yet another season.
The one thing I would say, Kartik, about this past week in football, though, which is really interesting to me, is that last weekend was incredibly entertaining. There was so many goals, great games on. And then to me, Boxing Day was really disappointing. And most of the games I watched were in the Premier League. So from this past weekend, the Wolves-Liverpool game was great. Really entertaining game. And it was, just seeing Liverpool just step up a gear, moving into the weekend and of course, going top of the table, creating a three-horse race for the title in England. Arsenal, not the best performance, but beating Burnley. The Man City Palace game, who would have expected Palace to bounce back in that one and win it 3-2? And then Manchester United and the debut of Ole Solskjaer in that 5-1 victory. Just a really entertaining weekend all in all. And then to me, Boxing Day was disappointing. I was the Fulham Wolves game was very kind of very tight. You can see that Ranieri is really kind of trying to focus on defensively, just trying to minimize the amount of goals and just kind of shore up the back there. And the Liverpool-Newcastle game was really one-sided. The Brighton-Arsenal game was a tight game too, and the Watford-Chelsea, so on and so forth. So to me, it was a disappointing Boxing Day, but a great Premier League weekend. And I know, Kartik, in your notes you mentioned about cold weather, whether cold weather could be a factor in terms of creating more entertaining games. And there have been, whether it's the Championship or the Bundesliga or the Premier League, there have been more entertaining games. But how does that explain the Boxing Day that was kind of a little bit drabber than what we were accustomed to watching?
Well, first off, I think Boxing Day has just become like any other random fixture date. You don't and unfortunately, this go around, you didn't even get the Manchester City played Liverpool on Boxing Day a few seasons ago. You didn't even have a matchup like that. Arsenal Liverpool would have been great. Instead, that's this Saturday. I think that's one explanation. Two, it's the quick turnaround after the weekend fixtures and squad rotation. There was an incredible amount of squad rotation on Boxing Day. I noticed that in the Championship too. Tons of squad rotation. There was some squad rotation in Serie A because Serie A has done something funky with their winter break these last few seasons. Now they're playing through Boxing Day and they're not, they break for New Year, but they play through Christmas and Boxing Day. So I noticed the rotation there. And I think the other thing, Chris, to remember is that I think we're now at a point where there is so much emphasis on the table and where you are and surviving the festive period. And this is particularly true in the Premier League, less so true in the Championship and in some other places. Although I think the Inter-Napoli match, which on paper looked like the best match of the week in any league, ended up being that where after 20 minutes, Ancelotti just decided he would take a point, which they didn't get. A lot of controversy to come out of that game about Koulibaly being racially abused, but that's another subject for another time. But there's this now sense you want to survive the Christmas period, right? You want to survive the festive period among managers. You don't want to – it used to be, hey, we have an opportunity if we're mid-table to get 9 points or 12 points and climb the table in this period. I think maybe Leicester's taking that attitude under Claude Puel. But every other manager, it seems, they want to survive the period. You mentioned Ranieri. I think very much Fulham is looking to get a solidified defense. He's been tinkering a lot, going back to his old reputation as the tinker man. We've actually, from a U.S. perspective, seen Timmy Ream start a few matches on the bounce, which he hadn't played a minute under the previous manager. So that's good from a U.S. men's national team perspective. But a lot of tinkering going on also as teams that are near the drop zone don't want to get cut adrift, like Fulham and like Cardiff and others. And there are other teams that just want to survive the period. So I think you're seeing more tactical results, unfortunately. And that's why it's pretty drab.
I think the other thing, though, too, Kartik, is we're seeing this season more than any other season in quite a long time, Premier League domination at the top of the table. So it ends up becoming, for fans of other clubs or for neutrals, I mean, I would consider myself a neutral because I have no Premier League club to support, less interesting, less entertaining, because I don't support Liverpool. I don't support Manchester City. I don't support Spurs or Arsenal or Chelsea or Man United. And it's really very much a top five, top six driven league right now, because, I mean, you listen to Rebecca Lowe and the two Robbies, they keep on coming back to, okay, all right, next topic. Okay, let's talk about Spurs. Are they in the hunt for the title? Yes, they are. Okay, can they do it? What about Liverpool? Isn't it amazing? Man City, they dropped off a bit, but can they still do it? And it's really, really focused, I mean, more so than ever, because there is a title race to have. The relegation fight, it's still early, but, it's not that interesting right now. I mean, there's a couple of storylines, but there's probably four or five teams that are really, really poor. So chances are those teams will be in the thick of it. You mean at the end of the season, probably going down pretty, you mean, if not early, at least looks like a sure bet that they might go down. So to me, as a fan watching the Premier League, I'm enjoying the football, but it's inconsistent in terms of maybe one weekend is good and then a few days later it's not as interesting because it's very predictable. One more thing to add to this, Kartik, is a comment from one of our listeners, and it's David Schley, and he posted on Twitter and said, "Remember how great Boxing Day was last year, was able to flip between the many networks of NBC to watch at least five different matches. This year's Boxing Day feels like any other match day with only one match per time slot at NBC, SN, and the rest on Gold." And I think that has a huge impact on the experience because, you mean, a year ago or all the previous Boxing Days, we would have been able to kind of, you know, go, yeah, this, I mean, this match is kind of, Liverpool Newcastle is just so one-sided. Let me go flip over and watch one of the other matches. And there you would find, a gem. You'd be like, okay, this is great. This is attacking, end-to-end action, 2-2 draw. Who's going to win this one? And I think that's part of the experience. And that might be part of the reason, too, that I was disappointed with Boxing Day this year.
Two quick points to follow up on when you said the point from the listener. Absolutely, I agree with that. That's probably the reason I was watching Juve Atalanta. I would have been watching another Premier League match on CNBC or on some other channel at the same time. I just didn't want to be bothered with Gold. The Premier League matches weren't that exciting, it seemed like, so I just watched the Serie A match instead. And then when that was over, I said, I have a Forest fan I correspond with in the UK, and saying, yeah, this match, we're hanging in there, we're playing well, we're up 1-0. And I said, okay, let me just fire it up, watch that match. So I think that is probably because there were no other Premier League matches on. Second thing, your point about competitiveness of the Premier League, I make every week. I think, and let me just explain this for people who keep saying, oh, you're being negative, the league is more competitive because six teams can win the title. Okay, I get that. But I also think for those of us like you and me that have watched the Premier League for two decades or more, Chris, there were more teams playing negatively because there's such a gap between the top six and the rest of the league. There were more mid-table teams. Mid-table teams used to not be teams that bunkered deep. Okay, the teams fighting relegation would. Now you're seeing just about everybody, with the exception of Everton, that plays a top six side, and West Ham. West Ham plays pretty open under Pellegrini. You're seeing everyone else sit deep, even if they get results. So even if Crystal Palace beats Manchester City, even if Leicester beats Chelsea, they're sitting deep. They're not, and it's not just tactical, like organized two lines of four. It's like very deep defending with the intent to break quickly on the counter, which leads to just these very drab matches and matches that are dependent on just defensive errors and counterattacks, which is not that enjoyable to watch for me.
And it's not just that, too. It is that, Kartik, but also the other added component, too, is that Newcastle, I think, went into this match against Liverpool thinking, okay, we can't beat them. So let's not put our full squad out there. Let's focus on the next game, which is going to be against Watford, and that's a winnable match this weekend. So let's go ahead and just kind of take it easy against Liverpool and consider ourselves, we're going to lose a match anyway, so we're not going to pick up any points. So, and that's something that hasn't happened, I think, ever, really. Yes, maybe in the last couple of seasons, but it's a new thing to the Premier League, where managers are picking and choosing kind of which games they're going to actually fight for. And that's something that we never got in the past. Some of the best Newcastle, some of the best Premier League matches in the history of the Premier League have been Newcastle against Liverpool, because it was so competitive. Kevin Keegan and all sorts of different storylines, the back and forth, the end to end. Anyway, those were some of the best matches. This one was not it by any degree.
Yeah, and I think there's also a tendency among players on those sorts of sides like Newcastle that are fighting relegation to not exert themselves as much in these matches against the Liverpools and the Spurs. And we're seeing that with Spurs winning every match 5-0, 6-0, whatever. Liverpool, I guess, also. But Spurs in particular have just been running rampant recently, because I think that there's teams defending deep against them. And there are teams that are just not exerting themselves fully because they have another fixture in 3 days. And they're thinking that's a match we can probably get something from. I saw this with Cardiff, quite frankly, against Manchester United, where Cardiff, and I ended up watching the Bundesliga game that was going on at the same time much more closely, because that match was unwatchable. And it was Frankfurt-Bayern, by the way, the match. And I saw in Cardiff a side that was saying, okay, well, this is a busy period. We've got several more matches. We're out of the drop zone right now, but if we exert ourselves here, we might be in the drop zone by the end of festive period. Let's mail it in, and then we have another match in 3 days, and let's get something there. And they did. They played Palace, and they got a draw. So yeah. I think there's a lot of that going on. You pretty much nailed it. And, Chris, remember this. In the past, the Premier League used to fine managers when they would rotate their squads heavily. Now they're not doing that anymore because it's happening so often. Or they would threaten to fine managers. I'm trying to remember the situation with Blackpool and Ian Holloway. I think at one point they did fine him because he had made this equation his mind. Oh, we're playing whoever they were playing, Manchester United, I think it was, or Chelsea. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get anything. I'm just going to play my reserve team and then try and get points in the next match against whoever. Yep. They fined him and tried to make an example out of him. Now, 7-8 years later, that's just the norm.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see too, because knowing the Premier League this weekend's probably going to be really entertaining, and we'll be talking about how great things are. But no, I think in terms of trends and the way things are heading, I think you're completely right, Kartik. And the other thing though too is that right now, other than Serie A and some games in the Scottish Premiership, there's no other game in town. So it is one of those things that I think timing wise. I think it's still in the best interest of the Premier League to continue playing through the winter break, even though they're going to have a winter break. I think it's next season or the season after next.
But, starting next season, with the new TV deal. But it'll be later. So I think there's some confusion over this. I've talked to a few people the last few days who said, oh, this is the last, they're going to break after Boxing Day. There won't be New Year's fixtures next year. No, that's not true. They're breaking in late January, which is a little odd. Yeah. Now, you could say it refreshes the clubs that are playing in Champions League in the knockout stages, and they'll be fresh when that rolls around. But is it the right timing for the rest of the other 88 teams, or actually it's not for the whole football league, so the other 16 teams in the Premier League? I don't know.
Yep, exactly. So Kartik, one more from me, and feel free to add one more from you in terms of what else you've been watching. But the one thing that stood out for me this past week was we already talked about in the last episode, Sunderland Till I Die, the fantastic documentary on Netflix. Really, really must watch if you haven't seen it yet. But the one that stood out for me, Kartik, is that I sat down and watched Bobby Robson, More Than a Manager. And this is a brand new documentary that's new to Netflix. I think it came out in the movie theaters in England over the summer. But for anyone who remembers Bobby Robson, or maybe if you don't, this is a really must-see documentary. The pacing is a lot slower than Sunderland Till I Die. It's quite sad in parts, but then uplifting in other parts. But to me, watching this documentary, I finished it up last night, and what I thought about this was that if there wasn't any Bobby Robson, I don't think that Pep Guardiola or Jose Mourinho would be the managers that they are today. Both of them worked very, very closely with Bobby Robson. Jose as a translator initially, but learning how to be a manager, how to use man management. And Guardiola being one of Bobby Robson's players, and Guardiola talking in the documentary about listening to a halftime team talk from Bobby Robson, and Guardiola saying to himself, I want to be a manager. I want to be like Bobby Robson. I want to be kind of at that level. And it's really a really great documentary to watch. And it follows a lot of the time is actually through Bobby Robson's time at Barcelona, as well as at England, almost making it to the World Cup final, and PSV, Newcastle United, also Porto, and I think it was and then Lisbon too. So really recommended documentary. So check it out. It's called Bobby Robson, More Than the Manager.
Ipswich, I assume, also?
Oh, Ipswich too. Yeah. Not a lot of footage on Ipswich, but definitely the story starts off at Ipswich Town. And talking about really at that point in time, Ipswich given an opportunity to somebody that I don't think had any management experience or was kind of a risk at that time. And Bobby Robson starting off there and learning the trade and talking about really how he kind of didn't know what to do really in terms of how to run the club. And he ran everything. He was in charge of, I think, public relations, the media, everything. So he was in charge of the entire club. And yeah, some great footage. Not a lot there, but there's some good footage there too.
Yeah. So for me, I've watched a disproportionate amount, or maybe a sickening amount, of Sky Sports programming this week just to get the pulse of the Pochettino. So Manchester United rumors and the Mourinho fallout. And look, if there's one thing about the Premier League, we've just bashed the Premier League. If there's one thing about the Premier League I'm excited about right now, Chris, it's Spurs. And if Pochettino were to leave for Manchester United, I think that'd just be like a buzzkill for a lot of us. That I'm a Manchester City supporter, but I'm also a neutral in the sense that I like good football. I like managers that put faith in youth. I like managers who have a style. Pochettino, to me, is I like managers who build a club. To me, Pochettino is all of that. I would hate to see him leave a club that he's built to just go to a club that's becoming a mercenary club, for lack of a better term. And even if he left for Real Madrid, it would be the same thing. Real quickly, two other things I want to point out this week, Chris, related to commentators, or three things. One, Keith Costigan is really good. So part of the reason that Leipzig-Bremen match was so entertaining for me was because he was calling the match, and he just has his he's just gotten to the point. And I've been critical of Costigan maybe a decade ago or 5 years ago when he was would commentate on domestic matches and was a reporter, whatever, and said, he's not quite at the level. He's okay. He's not great. He's just gotten to this incredible level of his voice inflection, knowing when to call certain things, when to just let a match breathe. He's brought Warren Barton. Warren Barton was the co-commentator for this match. Warren Barton was acceptable, which he, we've talked about that. He's not always the best guy in the booth or in studio. So I really enjoyed that.
Carter,
I enjoyed having. Yes.
Let me just chime in, just real quick while I'm thinking of it too. And that's actually something I thought about this past week a little bit too. Is that with the Bundesliga, Fox has talent that are really, really well educated in that league and really can talk. Hours if you sat down with Ian Joy or Stu Holden or Keith Costigan for sure, Warren Barton too. Where they've really kind of specialized in the Bundesliga because it's really the only club soccer league that they have, other than some Mexican league games, but they don't even promote those games really. But that's the thing though too, once the rights are up in 2020, and to me it's unlikely that the Bundesliga will stay with Fox. And wherever it goes, if it goes to DAZN or someplace else, from 2020 to 2022, which is the next World Cup, is what does that talent do? So they've specialized in the German league. Yes, they've kind of shown that they can focus on a league and really, well, it could be any league, really. It could be any competition, but they've shown that they have the goods, they have the knowledge, they know how to commentate a game or analyze a game. What do they do? Do they go elsewhere? Does Fox, lay them off? Or does Fox try to acquire some other rights, which at this point it looks unlikely that Fox is going to get back into kind of acquiring lots of soccer rights because they have the World Cup and they have the Women's World Cup. And the last World Cup they lost money on, they had to have layoffs there for that one. So that's just a question that goes into my mind. Any thoughts on that, on what they should do or where they would go or what they would do?
I don't know. I mean, that's a great. Those are great questions because I do worry about that going into 2022. I'm not changing my opinion of Fox. I want the listeners out there to know that because I think they still are very narrative and agenda driven when it comes to U.S. Topics of U.S. soccer. But I have enjoyed this holiday period. Ian Joy hosting the Bundesliga, Keith Costigan's calls, and quite frankly, Alexi Lalas's analysis. Once you take the U.S. MNT / MLS blinders off, he is actually a decent studio pundit. I mean, if he's just forced to analyze Bayern Munich versus Hoffenheim, where there's no, you know, blatant MLS angle, right? He does a good job. So Fox does have the talent, but when that league is not. They've lost the Champions League. They're not going to get that back, I don't believe. If they lose the Bundesliga, the zone you mentioned is a possibility I've heard also come 2020 in the States. I don't know what they do with that talent. Do they lay them off and bring them in on a tournament, just for the tournament, as they did with Derek Ray this past summer? What do they do? Because they have a stable of now proven soccer commentators that they would essentially have to let go of. Jovan Karoski is another one. I forgot about him. He's done a pretty good job. Because he knows that league. He played in that league. So I'm concerned about it.
So maybe they move on. Maybe they move on to go into DAZN, and DAZN by that point has, I mean, the Bundesliga and several other leagues, and then it becomes that they're still doing commentary or still doing analysis. But it's for a OTT, like over-the-top provider, rather than a traditional television provider. We'll have to wait and see. That's just one thing that I thought of. But especially Keith Costigan, who is somebody that is, you know, at the top of his game, has a great knowledge and experience, and could go anywhere and do that, but really has specialized and focused and honed his craft on the Bundesliga. We'll have to wait and see, Kartik.
Yeah, and then the other point I wanted to make was Janusz Michalik was back on the mic doing the Serie A match with Mark Donaldson yesterday, the Inter-Napoli match. Donaldson's commentary I'm now very used to from watching Serie A this season, and obviously he's been doing things for years, but now I'm hearing him basically once a week. Janusz, I had forgotten how good he is. Honestly, as much as I like the guy and have been a proponent of him in the past, he analyzed that match, pulled apart that match and analyzed it in a way a little different than Matteo Benetti, who I like a lot as well, but and what I think is great for that league and great hire by ESPN. But he has a critical nature, Janusz, that's often a critical lens that's often lacking in commentary in the U.S. So I, after 20 minutes of that match, said, you know what, if Sarri were managing Napoli, they'd be all over them. I'm saying this to myself. Mm-hmm. But Sarri's now moved on. He's at Chelsea. Ancelotti is more temperamentally cautious. Where I think everybody knows that, right? Because Ancelotti's always been like that. And he makes the point like 5 minutes later, you know, I'm really disappointed by Napoli. I think if this were Mauricio Sarri's team, you'd see Caillon getting up the wing, and you'd see all of this stuff happening that wasn't happening in this match. So it was things like that. He just is really good, and we don't see enough of him. Mm-hmm. I would say make the same point about Ross Dyer, who actually called the Dortmund Mönchengladbach match. Although I wouldn't advocate him jumping Keith Costigan in the pecking order at Serie A, but with the Bundesliga. But they had an excess of matches this week, so they brought in Ross Dyer. Both him and Janusz need to get more airtime. The third point is, you and I talk often about Arlo White, and from talking to people, it's not widespread, but talking to people who watch a lot of football, they're coming around to the same point of view. They're very comfortable with Arlo White because they've been listening to him now for 6 years on the Premier League broadcast. If they're Seattle fans or MLS fans, they've listened to him even longer than that. But there is a feeling when I compare him to a Keith Costigan or even to a Derek Ray at the same network that, he's very Americanized. He talks a lot, talks through things. And this is the first time I've heard the feedback from people other than you and me, Chris, quite frankly, that some people are just saying, I kind of tune him out, or sometimes I put the television on mute. I want to hear what Graham Lussone and Lee Dixon say, but Arlo White talks too much. So that's just another observation I've picked up on this week.
Yeah, there's something about a football commentator as far as the longevity. It's difficult to do because you think at some of the best commentators in the world, and some of the names that come up, of course, John Champion, Martin Tyler, Peter Drury, Andres Cantor, Derek Ray. But these are types of people that have been in the game for a very, very long period of time that you can get used to. You look forward to listening to the commentaries. And it's one of those things that with longevity, they don't get old. They don't get bothersome. And with Arlo, to me, short term, he's done a great job. Short term, he's good. He's excitable. He's descriptive. He understands the game and sometimes pulls the best out of Lee Dixon and Graham Lasseau. Lee Dixon, to me, I always want to listen to Lee Dixon. There's always some incredible pearls of wisdom there that he mentions in terms of his insight into the game. And to me, he does that better than anyone in the game, in the professional kind of commentary, co-commentary game, to be able to provide examples that are just open your eyes and go, oh, yeah, wow, I didn't think of that. But to me, that's the thing with Lola White is that longevity is he has become tiresome. He has become predictable. He has become over-talkative. And long-term, I don't think he's really cut out to be that person, to be that Premier League voice for years after years after years for the NBC to have the Premier League rights. And once the Premier League rights come up for bidding again with NBC, which is, what, 2022, I think it is, who's to say that NBC wins it again for another, say, 6 years? And could you imagine another 6 years of Arlo White? And it's not that he's a bad commentator, but I just don't like his style. It doesn't fit in well with the games themselves.
Chris, now that you have a Bluetooth pair of headphones, you can test this out. Next Arlo White call, which I think will be Arsenal, Liverpool, or whatever, some call in the future. How many times you, if you're not watching your television, but you're walking around with the Bluetooth headphones, hear excitement and think a goal has been scored, and you run back and you see it's just something.
Yeah, which that's something that's underrated, because you can listen to, say a John Champion, and you know, you can be in a different room, and you know exactly what's happening in that game, not by listening to his words, but by listening to his voice in terms of kind of whether it's goes up or goes down or is silent. You know what's happening in that match. You actually can close your eyes and imagine what's happening. And with Arlo, very excitable in terms of those types of things. And you kind of think that maybe you go into the other room and you come back and find out that a goal was scored, but you didn't know because, in terms of that commentary, vocal kind of up and down is not the same as other commentators. And actually, that happens a lot with commentators on Fox Sports, on Fox Soccer, is whenever a goal is scored, it's silence. It's kind of, they try to let the game breathe. They try to let the noise of the crowd kind of... they don't want to talk over it. But for me, in another room, coming back into that same room, then I find out the goal was scored. Like, how come they didn't get excited? How come they didn't go crazy? It's a completely different style. And Arlo is very American in his style, very English in his voice. But it's an interesting mix.
This having been said, when Arlo White hosts the studio and hosts the pitch side studio at the matches, and I don't know how much of that they're going to do in the future now that they're linked up with Sky via the Comcast Sky merger, Sky deal. But I think Arlo White's very good at that. I think he's top of his game when he's hosting a studio. I think he's probably better than Gary Lineker was at it. I mean, I really like him doing that. It's just the commentary, sometimes the inflection of the voice, the over-talking is annoying to me. Then again, I know for most American listeners, it's probably preferable to maybe the guys I'm mentioning, the Costigans and the Rays and the people that I like so much.
It's hard to say, Carter, because we're hardcore soccer fans and that's all we know, right? It's hard to say. But for the mainstream America, maybe it's more of a welcoming, bringing them in to something familiar with an English voice. And over time, maybe their tastes change, or we'll have to wait and see. I don't know. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. Not a lot to talk about this week, but we do have one interesting story.
Yeah, Twitter is going to be distributing FA Cup clips in a deal with the FA in a number of countries around the world, beginning with the third round next week. And Twitter is going to be under the deal. This is interesting. They're going to be dealing, sending direct messages to people who follow the top clubs, the big six clubs. And this includes the U.S. It includes India. It includes Brazil. So it includes some very big markets. So you'll be able to see quick clips of the FA Cup on Twitter. And Chris, this is part of the FA Cup now is expanding their television or their streaming or video coverage to the point where we will see every third round match, as we mentioned last week. Now you'll see clips from every match because quite honestly, in the past, and I don't know if you've gone through this, Chris, you've had to wait 2 days for the FA to post a package of highlights on YouTube, and you've already moved on to something else, and you're like, oh, wow, the Scunthorpe Rotherham highlights are up. I would have liked to have seen that on Saturday, and you see it on Thursday.
Right.
So this is a step in the right direction. The FA Cup finally joining modern football in terms of media. It was almost like a relic from the past until this season.
I don't like this, Kartik. I don't like this at all because there's two reasons why. So one is that if you're a fan of Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Arsenal, or Spurs, those are the only clubs that you'll get the direct messages if you follow those accounts or the clips of the FA Cup. And the thing about the FA Cup is it's all about the other clubs. It's all about the giant killings. It's all about the smaller clubs, the romantic clubs, the non-league clubs. You mean the clubs that have come through where the goalkeeper's a postman, or you mean all those that's to me what's exciting about the FA Cup. The second thing is that it undermines ESPN Plus. If I'm ESPN and I have the rights to the FA Cup, and then I'm finding out that under a separate deal that they've sold these rights to Twitter, and Twitter's going to be posting direct messages to the fans of the top six, you mean that undermines their audience? That undermines the number of people. Some people might say, you know what, I'm busy today. Maybe I'll just follow it on my DM and see all the goal highlights, and I don't need to watch ESPN Plus to watch the game, minute by minute type of thing. So I understand. I mean, it's good that they're moving with the times. I just don't think it's. Why not do this for the Premier League? But then again, that would undermine NBC's rights to the coverage of that league. So I don't know. It just seems like a weird fit.
Well, it is weird that they're doing the top six clubs. By the way, if you want to watch Premier League highlights and you have you can go to the ESPN FC app or the ESPN FC online, and you'll see plenty of Premier League highlights if you don't want to sit around and wait for them on Goal Zone or whatever show is after the NBC broadcast. So it actually is kind of already going on, just not in this kind of wide dissemination. So they, for whatever reason, ESPN has bumper rights for the Premier League in the U.S. And I don't. It appears like no one else does besides ESPN. And obviously NBC as a rights holder has it. But ESPN seems to have some rights to show Premier League clips that no one else does in the U.S.
Yeah, what it is actually is that NBC has the same rights to show those clips. But and there's a after the Premier League ends, say on a Saturday, there's a period of time where they have to wait. I think they have to wait like an hour or 2 hours after those games before they post the highlights or the clips from those games. And NBC follows those guidelines to the T. They make sure that not to upload those clips until they're allowed to do so. ESPN, for whatever reason, dismisses those guidelines and just goes and posts them as soon as the videos are available. And so a lot of people think that ESPN is a place to go to for the NBC clips. NBC is a place to go for those clips too. It's just that they come out there a little bit later.
And in the UK, Sky cannot post anything until Match of the Day is over. That's correct, I believe.
I believe so. Yeah. So
on BBC. So.
All right, Kartik, let's move on. TV ratings, not a lot this week. We will probably skip the listing on worldsoccertalk.com and post it next week instead. But three ratings did come out so far. And with the holidays, too, it kind of messes things up because with the offices at Nielsen closed, we don't get those ratings as quickly as normal. But Friday's game between Wolves and Liverpool and NBCSN, 222,000 people tuned into that one to watch that 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock Eastern game. And then, Kartik, we have a number for the Bundesliga. Finally, we had Borussia Dortmund against Borussia Mönchengladbach on Friday. on FS1, I believe it was. 81,000 viewers tuned into this one. And the reason I got excited about the Bundesliga is because it's very rare that we get to actually share that, because the numbers usually are so low that, you mean, they don't come up in the actual listings of the TV ratings. But here we have one. It's 81,000 for Dortmund against Mönchengladbach. And again, Kartik, it's the Bundesliga just cannot hit that 100,000 mark unless it's a kind of a rare Bayern Munich game or sometimes a rare Dortmund game.
Yeah, and this was such a big match. Jadon Sancho with a sick goal. I was watching this match with Neil Blackman of YanksAreComing.com fame, and just great all-around soccer pundit, and I'm sure many of you know. They cut out the thing that was so annoying. It was right after the match. They had a five-minute post-match show with Ian Joy and Alexi Lalas, Stu Holden. And then they cut out, and they had some stupid gambling program hosted by Rachel Bonetta, who used to be a soccer person. It was just typical Fox. I'm thinking, oh, gosh, you know, they have a good match. Maybe this match will get a decent number for them, which it did. Now, again, it's all relative, because that's a terrible number for La Liga, well, La Liga in the past, or MLS or Premier League. But they don't even capture the moment of that table-topping match between 1 and 2 entering the weekend in Germany, and the brilliance of Sancho and the great game actually Fabian Johnson had too, if they want to go with a U.S. angle. Pulisic did not get off the bench in this match, but they just go right to a gambling program about some, you know, other sports, right? Even though Rachel Bonetta was a soccer person, now I guess she's an all-around sports person. When she came on, I first thought, oh, okay, you know, it must be soccer, it's her, and it wasn't. It was other stuff.
Yeah.
So that was very disappointing.
Yeah, and then one last number is the Premier League Goal Zone on Friday, which I guess came on after the Wolves-Liverpool game. That one had 87,000 viewers. So more people watched that Goal Zone, which it must not have been much of a Goal Zone because there was only one game to talk about. More people watched that than they watched the Dortmund-Gladbach game.
A lot of Mourinho talk on that. I DVR'd that, and Derek Ray interviewed Neil Ashton, and Neil Ashton said, Man United have three... Derek Ray hosted that, by the way. Rebecca Lowe came into the studio for Saturday. They have three candidates for the job. One, Mauricio Pochettino. Two, Mauricio Pochettino. Three, Mauricio Pochettino. Yeah. That's going to stick with me until this thing is resolved for 6 months. That was good by Neil Ashton. So that was on that show.
Right. All right, listener mailbag. Before we jump into that, I'd like to take a moment to thank you, the listener, for making this show possible during 2018. This is our last show of 2018 before we move on to 2019. And in the past 12 years that we've been doing this podcast in various different forms, the feedback we've gotten from you from the last 12 months has been the best ever, has been the most ever. So it's really it's the engine that keeps on driving this show. And we greatly appreciate it. And we'd love to get any feedback you have, good, bad, or indifferent, whatever it may be, or asking advice, let us know, and we will read it out. First up is John Average Geek. This follows, I think, a conversation or discussion we had last week, Kartik, on the podcast. John Average Geek says, MLS should make MLS Cup right after the November break. Taking a break after the conference finals does not hurt NFL. Build the hype. Also, make MLS Cup a League Cup that is separate for the regular season. Not sure how to punish bad teams. And next up is addition by relegation. This is I love how you and Kartik went back and forth a bit on the most recent pod. I'm also sitting and watching the Sunderland documentary. Keep up the great work, guys. Vincent Orozco says, U.S. soccer's decline in performance is also MLS doing a poor job with the youth system. Both MLS and USSF share revenue and do not invest enough in youth development. I don't think that foreign talent is hurting MLS. In my opinion, it helps more than it hurts. The major problem with soccer in this country is that both entities, both MLS and USSF, want to make money, a lot of money. Question for you, Gaffer. In 2000, London was awarded the Olympics and spent millions of dollars on sports infrastructure and youth development. Do you think that helped the Three Lions in this World Cup? And lastly, thanks for your show and insights. I really enjoy it. I really like your honesty about soccer in this country. I believe you guys have the best show. Thanks for taking the time to read this. So, Vincent, in answer to your question, Yes, definitely. The Olympics helped in terms of infrastructure in the UK and focusing more money on sports across you know, all different types of sports in the UK. But I don't think it's actually helped England and the Three Lions, especially with the World Cup. It's been a long time coming in terms of having, you mean, kind of working. Well, actually, I guess in some ways too. I mean, a lot of it comes from some of these younger England players playing in the Premier League and getting playing time, such as, you know, Dele Alli is one great example. Harry Kane as another, one of many, as well as Sancho. Sancho, I mean, moving over to Germany and playing there and really playing extraordinarily well. I think at the end of the day, it comes down to just playing time. It's just these players, younger players, getting more playing time and that helps build the national team. I don't think it's an infrastructure thing that's aided them.
Is it just luck? I don't know. They've just hit on a generation with Sterling, Rashford, Sancho. Harry Winks, I think, is going to be that sort of player. And Pochettino's working him more into Spurs.
Lingard.
Yeah, have they just hit on a generation and it's cyclical? We don't know yet.
I think so. I mean, you look at England too. I mean, they won the U17 World Cup. They won the U20 World Cup. I mean, it came to the semifinals of the 2018 Men's World Cup. I think it's a generational thing. I mean, a lot of these youngsters coming through the system. I mean, you look at the U17 team and the U20 team. There's a lot of talent on those teams. Some of them that play for Liverpool, some of them that are on the Liverpool squads and Everton squads, and probably Man City squads too, Kartik. They're not getting enough playing time and then making decisions to go elsewhere and play for other clubs.
Sancho.
Sancho's a perfect example of that too. But there's some really good players. I think Brewster is one of them who's on the Liverpool's books.
Reece Nelson, who's on Arsenal's books, who's at Hoffenheim, who's playing actually very well in the Bundesliga, is a great example. Foden, obviously, is an example. Maybe it's just generational, Chris. I don't know.
I think it is, Kartik. Yeah, I think it is. Last up is David Schley, and he says, hey guys, I enjoy the podcast and the website. I literally look at the website every day to see all the matchups. I messaged you on Twitter about the Club World Cup and NCFC, which is the North Carolina Football Club.
Correct.
And after hearing the most recent pod, I wanted to dig a little bit deeper with my question. I wanted to hear your opinions on North Carolina FC's hiring of Dave Sarachan, both as a tactical hire and what he can do for a club with MLS aspiration, but also with regards to USSF and the owner Steve Malik. I remember Kartik tweeting about how Steve Malik is becoming a leading figure in USSF. What has contributed to his rise? Where do you see it taking him? And what does this mean for North Carolina FC? The Courage are already the best women's club team in the world. But this area, which has an enormous youth program, would love to have a serious shot for a MLS team.
Real quickly, David, thanks for the question. I'll say the Courage are one of the three best women's club teams in the world. They may be the best. I know they beat Lyon in the International Champions Cup, which I was at, but it was off-season for Lyon. So I put Lyon, Wolfsburg, and NC, the Courage in that category. I don't know which was the best, but they're one of the three best.